Hey, everybody, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. We've got a great episode of the show here for you. We got Kurt Schlichter breaking down whether Trump should or should not debate Kamala a second time. We've got Chris DeGaul talking about the hidden issue, the Trojan horse of education and parental rights in this education. And then we have Jack Posobiec breaking down the smug elites and the way they sneer down their noses at all of us who are being honest about the real problems that Democrats have brought on this country and how it's not racist, it's not misogynist, it's not xenophobic. Jack breaks it down in brilliant detail. Consider joining members.charliekirk.com, members.charliekirk.com, to become a member of our exclusive community where we give you access to content, ad-free episodes, and so much more. You help us out tremendously when you do that. That's members.charliekirk.com. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com.
I'm joined by Kurt Schlichter, who's a senior columnist at TownHall.com and also author of the new book, The Attack. Kurt Schlichter, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
So, Kurt, I wanted to bring you on to discuss something that is top of the news, and that is what happened right after the debate. Kamala Harris threw down the gauntlet instantly and said, I want a second debate. Let's do that again. And Trump says, well, no, I won. And like a prize fighter, I'm not gonna fall for that. You know, they want the rematch. Let's break it all down, but let's hear it. But first, let's hear it in their own words. Let's go ahead and play cut 185.
Rules? Do you want a different format?
Well, you know, when you don't win, it's like a fighter. When a fighter has a bad fight, gets knocked out, or loses the fight, the first thing he says is, "We want a rematch." So, we won the debate according to every poll, every single poll. I think. Are we going to do a rematch? I just don't know. We'll think about it.
Would you still do the one?
All right, and Kamala Harris has her take on it, 186.
Two nights ago, Donald Trump and I had our first debate. And I believe we owe it to the voters to have another debate.
All right, Kurt Schlichter, make sense of this. What is this? Is this all posturing? Is this spin? What's happening?
Well, look, I think Kamala Harris and her handlers were so thrilled that she didn't publicly soil herself and completely melt down that they thought, yeah, let's ask her another. We'll show him. We really did well. And then things began to settle in because the initial vibe of the debate is not the current vibe of the debate. The idea that Trump lost the debate has kind of faded away. And I think she did achieve one thing she wanted to do. She didn't make a complete idiot of herself, but she really didn't introduce herself to the voters very well. She never answered a single question. She never really set out, except in these vague, lame generalities, what she wanted to do. Oh, you know, I have a passion for small business. Really? You might have started one. So I think now the reason to have another debate has changed. At first, it was just kind of, yeah, all right, woo. And then now it's like, maybe we didn't accomplish what we needed to accomplish. And as far as Trump's concerned, he's like, I wanted three. You countered with one. You got one.
Yeah, well, so this is what I'm wondering. Is this the art of the deal, right? Is Trump posturing, saying, hey, I'm not going to do this, because he's basically accepted all of the rules that have been thrown at him. I mean, Biden asked for, you know, the moon. He got it. Trump agreed to the early debate. maybe did a little too well, knocked Biden out of the race. Now we got Kamala. He accepted a debate with ABC, which now even Mark Penn, a former Clinton advisor, is saying needs to be investigated because of just how biased the moderators were. It was a 3-on-1. Absolutely. So play this out, the political calculus for Trump. Does he stand to gain by doing another debate? I think that this is posturing. I think he's going to end up saying yes to another debate. Maybe I'm wrong. I think he is trying to get the best deal he can. And I think this is going to be a bit like 2020, where he was widely seen to lose the first debate, but then he came back and did much better in the second. What do you think, Kurt?
Look, Trump's actions are consistent with him both not wanting a future debate and with wanting one on more favorable terms. I mean, the ABC choice was a total disaster. They were worse than anybody imagined. The only only people happy about, besides Kamala's fans, is Candy Crowley. Congratulations, you're not the most corrupt debate moderator in history. Trump has a hard time passing up challenges, even when it's strategically beneficial. Now, keep in mind, he did it during the primaries. He did not at any time have a debate with anybody in the primary. That worked for him, obviously. So he's perfectly capable of not having one and passing up her childish taunting. But I don't know. We will find out. I can think of advantages and disadvantages to going ahead and having another debate.
Yeah, Kurt, play the political calculus out for us, though. Does it make sense for Trump to do a second debate? Or is he seeing the fact that independents are tracking with Republicans, but, you know, they've got those graphs and we played those earlier in the week. Independents are tracking with Republicans like they haven't done since 2016. There was also a lot of ink spilled about focus groups. And, a lot of the undecideds were breaking for Trump after a debate that Kamala thinks she won.
My question is, does Trump need a knockout, or can he continue on this path where people learn a little more about Kamala and then go over to Trump? Trump's not going to lose any people. Okay, I don't think he's going to shed any support. I don't think he would lose people significantly if he did even a poor debate. Okay, and people say he didn't do great on this one. That's open to debate, but he certainly didn't lose significant numbers, if any, nor did she gain any significant numbers. She needs it. She needs a moment, Andrew. She needs a moment to change things and change them up, because Trump is slowly gaining on her. Right now, Trump is ahead in Pennsylvania. There's really no path for her without Pennsylvania, which is why all you heard was fracking at the debate. Him saying she was going to ban it and her saying, well, absolutely not. Even though I, totally said I was going to, she's got a lot at risk. Trump now knows how she's going to perform, which is a lot of memorized sound bites. I think he needs to take a venue where they are not going to actively take the other side. I mean, The media is always going to be against them, right? They were even against it in the CNN debate with Jake Tapper and Dana Bass. It was just not as bad as usual, so we didn't really focus on it. We just assumed it. But this was, this was obnoxious.
It was egregious.
It was egregious, and I think it helped take Trump off his game. And the thing is, look, I'm a lawyer. I argue like a lawyer. Trump is not a lawyer. Trump does not argue like a lawyer. And that's very frustrating to me. But on the other hand, is there a better communicator in all of the United States of America than Donald Trump?
Bingo.
No.
Bingo.
No, there isn't. So,
I totally agree with you. I totally agree. I think Trump, because, my father's a lawyer. I was looking for point-to-point match. Yep. And I was like, oh, you missed that one. This was an easy layup. But somehow, in the midst of all of that, the performance artist, Kamala, said all the right things, and it didn't land a punch really on him, and the undecideds broke for him, and it's almost like Trump has won the post debate.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. He's totally won it. And I saw an interesting difference. Women, including conservative women, said, you know, I'm nervous. I think she did well. Men freaking despised her. They just felt she was condescending, obnoxious. And Kamala comes across as every, you know, nudie school teacher ever told you to use your inside voice. And I don't think, because, you know, most of the regime media are a bunch of lame femboys. I don't think they really picked up on that, but that vibe's definitely there for, you know, actual men.
I think you're spot on, Kurt. Excellent analysis as always.
Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gain this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com.
I'm joined by Chris DeGaul. He's the host of Salem 990, The Answer in Philadelphia, and he's also the VP of content at the Herzog Foundation, doing important work, also a partner on this show in the area of education. So, Chris, welcome to the show. Honored to have you back. One of the things we don't talk about as much, because there's so much drama going on with this election, but we're not talking about how it's going to impact our kids' education. I'm a father of three. You're also a father. Let's break down some of these issues that people are talking about in this education space that you are so familiar with. What would a Harris-Waltz victory look like for parental rights? This is a huge, huge touch point in our country right now. Chris?
Yeah, I think the biggest question we have before us is a Harris-Waltz administration means more Randy Weingarten, more of the same teachers' unions, more of the same public education. And if that's working for you, great. You know, I don't come to you today saying shelve public education if that's your choice for your children. But what we know is that school choice is busting out all over the country. There are some 13 schools with what's known as some form of school choice. Many of them are what are known as universal school choice. You know, you mentioned Charlie's in Nebraska today. They've got a constitutional issue this fall they'll be voting on to maintain school choice in Nebraska or reverse course. School unions are working hard, Andrew, to make sure that parents are stuck in a geographic zip-coded school district where their children must go no matter how they perform without any choice whatsoever. And if they want to go elsewhere, they pay for it, which is fine. But the question before us all is, and I think everybody understands, if you're paying taxes to the state for education, why not just let people keep that money? Shop around, send it where they'd like. Public school, private school, Christian school, use it to homeschool or not. Maybe some homeschoolers don't like that arrangement. That's fine too. But the point is, open up the marketplace to choice. Let people shop like we do for anything else. Why shouldn't we do that with education? And of course, the Harris-Waltz administration wouldn't care for that a little bit.
No, not at all. Chris, you know, and by the way, you can read more about these topics at readlion.com. Readlion.com. It's a publication of the Herzog Foundation, which Chris is involved with. Chris, and I think this is a big sleeper issue, by the way, parental rights. Also, when it comes to the trans issue, all of these things, we have states like California and Oregon and Washington that have floated legislation or passed it where you could actually sort of state-sanctioned kidnapping if you don't agree with the gender ideology or the gender transition of your child. But I think this is a huge sleeper issue. Are we seeing states that are leading on this, maybe Florida, others, when it comes to school choice, being able to get your kids out of a bad school and into a school that is performing?
I got to tell you, we are really fortunate in some states to have role models. Two governors come to mind in particular. Well, despite Governor DeSantis, who has been kind of leading all along, I have to say, in Florida. But there are two that really stand out in the Midwest in particular, and that is Kim Reynolds of Iowa. And just to her south is Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders of Arkansas, both of whom have passed robust universal school choice. This was something Governor Sanders did in her first year. In fact, we're honored to host her tomorrow here at the foundation for a private conversation with some of our friends. And she is a tremendous warrior for this cause. And Andrew, what she managed to do, the carrot stick approach was, we'll give the teachers in our state, our public school teachers, a raise if they agree to universal school choice and compete in the marketplace. That agreement was struck in the legislature. She shepherded it through. We need leaders in governor's mansions, Andrew. That's what we need. And we do have a few, but not enough.
That's fantastic. Sarah Huckabee Sanders is really proving her mettle in a lot of different ways. And I'm excited about her future, to be honest, Chris. Tell us about the Herzog Foundation and the work that you guys do there. Give us the pitch and why what you're doing is so important.
I hope broadly, if there's anybody in your audience today, Andrew, that is in the Christian school space, maybe you currently operate a Christian school and you're thinking about your future, maybe fundraising, maybe curriculum, maybe best practices, even things like security, managing a board, managing your school's resources. We offer free training all year long. If you can travel to it, you get registered for it online. We offer different kinds of training around the country. If you can travel to it, we pick up the full training, your meals, your lodging, all of it. Our namesake, Stan Herzog, who we lost a few years ago, this was so important to him. Every nickel is covered on the foundation's dime if you can travel to the training. So I really encourage people that are interested in either creating a Christian school or homeschool, please reach out to herzogfoundation.com and we'll guide you as to how to do that.
Well said, Chris. Thank you so much. Jack, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. I think you've been monitoring Trump's speech. What is he talking about? What are we zeroing in on here, Jack?
You know, really, this election has centered around these ideas of which candidate stands up for the basics for quality of life of the American people, and whether that is himself or Kamala Harris. And now you could be talking about the people of Springfield, Ohio, who find themselves in a very unique situation, but also the people of every major city in America, people who have been living in places like Los Angeles, people who live in Philadelphia, people who live in New York, Detroit, places Chicago that I've visited in all the last couple of weeks here, that have absolutely deteriorated under this regime that is, for lack of a better term, is completely anti-civilizational. And what President Trump is talking about, it's not just the border. It's not just the lawlessness we see there. It's the lawlessness that we see everywhere. And the border is just one example of that, how we've become completely overrun, completely controlled by a corrupt ruling class in this country that cares more about America being the leader of the G7 and America being the global hegemon and America taking on the BRICS nations as if that's anything that's going to help the American people. And meanwhile, you've got homeless women with their babies in Springfield, Ohio, saying that she can't even get basic public housing because all the Haitians get first run access to this. And Tim Walz, by the way, who's the vice presidential standard bearer on the Democrat side, is someone who all the way back in 2019 was doing the exact same thing. So you've got the Haitians to Ohio and you've got the Somalians to Minnesota. And again, people are sitting there saying, who is it that's for us? And one of the things that I've said for a long time is that if you think this is all happening by accident, you still don't quite get it yet. All of this is an operation. The point of a system is what it does. This is an operation that's being run on the American people. This is an operation that's being done to the American people to turn you into a debt slave, to put you in servitude, to make it so. And it's, of course, as we know, the WEF saying, you'll own nothing and be happy. But that really is what it comes down to. They want you to have no ownership, not only of your own homes, your own goods, but even of your own country. They want you to be a consumer state, because you'll sit there. And I debated the Libertarian candidate, Chase Oliver, who's running for the Democrat the Libertarian candidate for president. And you keep it's just about the GDP. Yeah, it's just about the GDP. We did one of those zero hedge debates. It's just the GDP. It's just the GDP. And you know, this is before the Springfield stuff had really kicked off. But I would have loved to bring that up. I said, how many cats, Chase? How many cats? For the service of the GDP?
I mean, it's so obnoxious and a crazy question, and that's yet relevant, because these people all look at it as, well, we need these workers. We need these workers. And it's like, okay, I guess. But why does one small town, and this is not just Springfield, by the way, this is happening all over America, but why does one small town of 50,000 have to be inundated with 20,000 foreigners almost overnight, transforming the culture, transforming the streets, transforming the economy? Everything about this town was turned upside down. And for what? What was the rationale? What was the actual logic behind an immigration policy that insane? Because they're victims, Jack.
They are. When you hear the statement of it serves the needs of the GDP, here's what's actually going on. Here's how it works in reality. They're sort of telling on themselves. Because in situations like this, there's always an economic hub and there's always a business driver to it. And here's what it is in Springfield. In Springfield, you have a Japanese auto parts firm. You have a microchip processor fabrication plant that's in Springfield. You have various meat processing centers in Springfield. And guess what? Guess who's getting all the jobs in Springfield? It's the jobs for the migrants. It's the jobs for the Haitians. And you say, well, wait a minute. If there's all these unemployed people, all these homeless people in Springfield, why don't some of them just go take the jobs? And you of course, hear this old canard that, these are jobs that Americans won't do. Well, as it turns out, here's how it works in reality. They create something called the hidden job market. So these businesses open up in a certain area. They pick one of these not economically depressed areas, so they get credits from the federal government for operating there. And then they realize, wait a minute, we can get more federal credits and we can get more federal subsidies if we go and hire migrants and refugees through the refugee resettlement program. So they go to the refugee resettlements, and this could be Catholic charities, could be Lutheran charities, could be various other charity groups and refugee groups that bring them in. And they tell them, or they work with a network of independent recruiters, they tell them about the job openings. So they rig the system and create what's called the hidden job market, so that the people that live in the town don't even know about the job openings. The job openings all go to who? The refugees. And now the company is getting federal subsidies for hiring the refugees, for hiring the migrants. They're getting more subsidies for operating in one of these areas, and they're essentially importing their own slave labor. They're importing their own low-cost workers. And by the way, at no cost to the company itself, because we, the people, the federal government, are subsidizing the entire thing. And the people who are the losers are, as you say, the people who lived in the town. Say, wait a minute, why is all of this stuff going on? Why are all the people coming in? And you realize there's massive economic drivers to it, but it's a perverse economy because it's being subsidized by the federal government. And of course, by the way, the local town council, the local city manager, the local mayor, even the local governor in the sense of Ohio, they love it because they all get the increased tax benefits of having all of these businesses in their area. So they have also a massive economic incentive to do what? To hide up or cover up the crimes that are being committed by the people who are there. And so, it's unfortunate that, sometimes school kids have to get killed in traffic accidents when one of these illegals crashes into a school bus on the first day of school and kills a little boy. But, that's all just worth it. That's just a sacrifice to the altar of the GDP.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. You've asked and MyPillow listened. They're finally bringing you the most requested offer ever. Right now, you can get the queen-size premium MyPillow for only $19.98. MyPillow is made with patented adjustable fill. It adjusts to your exact individual needs, regardless of your sleep position. It helps keep your neck aligned and holds its shape all night long, so you get the best sleep of your life. But that's not all. Get their 6-piece kitchen and bath towel set for only $25. The brand new mattress topper for as low as $69.98. And their famous MyPillow bed sheets for as low as $25 and so much more. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425. Use promo code KIRK to get huge discounts on all MyPillow products, including the premium queen-size MyPillow for only $19.98. That's the lowest price ever. Don't delay. Order today. Use promo code KIRK at checkout. That is promo code KIRK at MyPillow.com. Check it out right now. Wonderful organization, MyPillow.com.
You've got GOP Rep. Derek Van Orden in Wisconsin saying that his hometown is terrified after Venezuelan gang members' violent scourge. So there was Alejandro Jose Coronel Zarate, he's 26. He's accused of sexually and physically assaulting a woman under quote-unquote particularly brutal circumstances, holding the woman and daughter against their will, and over the course of a period of time sexually and physically assaulting them both. And this is according to the Prairie du Chien police chief Kyle Tenner, said this in a press conference. Then, Jack, I want to take your attention to a breaking story, actually. Let me make sure I've got the details right. This is in Florida. An illegal from the Dominican Republic just murdered an entire family. Actually, I'm sorry, upstate New York. The killer's Julio Cesar Pimentel Soriano. And we actually have a cut of this, 189.
A crime scene unlike any other for Irondequoit Police Chief Scott Peters.
This was a horrific scene. In almost 32 years of doing this job, I've never seen anything like it.
Shock and horror from the Irondequoit community, a family of four, victims of a homicide in their own home.
Adults do what adults do, but kids are innocent. So take that for what it's worth. Mom was being a mom, protecting her children. Dad, I can't say, but nobody should ever be able to do this or be able to think that they could do that to a child.
So, Jack, this is an illegal that was also wanted for a 2019 murder in the Dominican Republic, but he traveled to Puerto Rico, got a fake ID, and just hopped right over to America and has been able to stay because there's the whole system is inundated with people like this. And now a family of four is dead because we let an illegal alien into our country. Jack, your reaction.
Yeah, one of the things that came up in that debate that I held with Chase Oliver and Robbie Suave and Ryan Gruduski were there as well, was that they will say, well, wait a minute, you know, the rate, they start playing these statistics games and they'll say, well, the rate of violent crime from illegal immigrants is actually less than the rate of violent crime for all Americans. So therefore, you don't have a problem with crime. You just have a problem with illegals. To which, of course, will respond, but wait a minute. We can actually reduce the rate of illegal immigrant crime to 0%. You're never going to be able to do that with any general population, but every single one of these crimes is preventable in the first instance because we don't have to allow them break into our country.
Yeah, but I don't agree with those stats, by the way. I think those stats are completely flawed. I mean, I'll play a clip from John Legend basically being like, because he's a Springfield, Ohio native. So that's where he was born. I don't think he's probably been back. But like the point is, he makes the same point that
and he still lives there, right?
No, yeah, right. We have a picture actually. If you want to put 191 B roll, this is his Beverly Hills mansion. So you've got John Legend lecturing the people of Springfield, Ohio, who can't get basic government services, and this is where John Legend lives in this huge mansion in Beverly Hills. It's like $18 million, and he's sitting there getting on his phone lecturing about the Christian ethic that we need to have towards 20,000 Haitian immigrants inundating a small town in middle America. It's absolutely disgusting. It strikes me, Jack, we go to this debate, right, where most of the pundit class says that Trump lost. Kamala's saying she won. Yeah, look at, but it was ineffective. It didn't even matter. It didn't even matter who won on style. It didn't matter any of that stuff. I think Trump's communication style gets through to everyday America. And the reason is that we're all sick of this nonsense where people are coming into our country illegally and taking advantage of the system and ripping us all off. So I think people just see through the nonsense and they know where Trump stands and they know they're going to get more of the same with Kamala. Your reaction?
Yeah, no, I completely agree on your analysis of the debate there. And I caught your conversation with Rich Barris yesterday, which I thought was fantastic. And the only thing that I would I would alter from what you said is it's not that they're taking advantage of the system. It's that people are realizing that this is the system, that the point of the system is what it does, that the system exists specifically to screw over these people in working class America, to screw over these people that live in big cities. Look, when we have the RNC and the DNC, or when Xi Jinping comes to San Francisco, or when I was in Philadelphia for the debate the other night, they clean the city up so fast. They clean crime up. They put police officers on the street, which, by the way, tells you right there that they know that if you want to decrease crime, you increase the status of police officers, you increase patrols, and magically, crime vanishes. Crime is able to be kept under control. They could do this at any time. And when you and I were in Chicago, we saw this. We saw how it was the cleanest Chicago has ever been that I've ever been there. It was the safest that it's ever been since we were there. And it was like, wait a minute, cities could be like this all the time. Why aren't they? Why don't they allow cities to be like this all the time? And you realize because there is a political advantage to keeping cities disadvantaged.
I would be remiss if I didn't show you these images right now. Charlie's doing another Prove Me Wrong on campus. Throw some of these images up, guys, that we just got back. These are live images from Charlie. I mean, there's thousands of students that greeted Charlie at this event. I mean, this is, I genuinely mean this when I say it's civilizationally defining, changing stuff. When you see this type of reaction on liberal college campuses for somebody like Charlie Kirk, who's just showing up debating people, it's phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. So those clips get seen tens and tens of millions of times, Jack, and you do this kind of work yourself. This is big time. And I can just tell you that it didn't used to be this way. Something has shifted. Something has changed. I was chatting with Charlie about this
the other night after, I forget which event it was, but Charlie and I were just chatting, you know, one night, and he was telling me about it and said, Jack, I've never seen anything like this. That he's like, I've been doing these campus events for a decade now. And, you know, we don't get this. It's usually contentious. We've gotten the protests, we've gotten attacked, but we've never been welcomed. And suddenly it seems like either there's this welcoming vibe, but then there's also a vibe of people who they don't necessarily want to attack, but they actually seem like they want to ask questions. Like they're actually becoming curious as to what is the conservative movement? Who is Donald Trump? What is this thing that he stands for when you guys say America first? And I think a lot of it goes back to the work that people have been putting in, like Turning Point USA, but then also Donald Trump, to go to those non-political podcasts, to go on things like Theo Vaughn, to do the streaming with Twitch stars and all this different stuff that he's been doing to reach out to non-traditional audiences to kind of change the conversation as to where things are, as opposed to the way the mainstream media, the corporate media would paint all of us, to suddenly say, wait a minute, you know, we're not some like hateful, you know, extremists who just hate the country and want to take over everything. It's like, no, we actually love our country and we love our families. We want to make things better. Like we were talking about safe cities and safe communities and safe neighborhoods. And that means for all people, because I said this to a reporter recently. When Donald Trump, they said, how is Donald Trump going to unite America? And I said, well, Donald Trump has always been trying to unite America. Make America great again has always meant for everyone. He never said for only one group of people. He never said make America only great again for white people, make America great again only for Christians. He never said that. You said that. Joy Reid said that. You've been the ones adding things, putting words in his mouth, putting words in all of our mouths. And so now finally something has shifted, and you see that with Elon, with David Sacks, with RFK, with Tulsi getting on board now, the independents, the Democrats that are getting on board, the MAGA coalition, and suddenly MAGA with, it's got, also we also have the Make America Healthy Again. I don't like MAHA. I don't think MAHA, you got to say the big MAHA. I think it sounds better. You say the big MAHA. The big the MAHA big is on board with MAGA. Yeah, the big MAHA. And so we got the big MAHA going on now. And suddenly there's a lot of life. And we saw that with the conventions as well, that, you know, the RNC was like a convention carnival atmosphere, and the DNC was like totally cold and scripted. It just sucked. No, this is where the energy is. And Charlie is definitely tapping into that.
I totally agree. One other thing that I think what they see in Charlie is what they see in Trump, which is a fighter for their voice. They realize that this is a guy who's going in boldly. He's not apologizing for being exactly who he is and believing in these things and not couching his language, not pandering. He's just going hard. He's going hard with his ideas. And they're like, you know what? I agree. Like, I agree with these ideas. Yeah. And they want the champion in the middle of the ring. Okay. I got to ask you one last question. I got one minute left with you, Jag. Should Trump do a second debate or should he not? And do you think it has a chance of happening?
Yes and no. I think obviously he doesn't seem like he has a lot of appetite for it right now, though I think something he should do is hold a town hall where you tap into the same energy that Charlie's tapping into right now. You could do it on a college campus. You could do it in Western Pennsylvania. You could do it in one of these swing states, but where it's Trump, Kamala, and the people, where the people are the moderators. You call it the people's town hall, and you actually let regular citizens be the ones who ask the questions. And, you know, maybe you have some people there just to help manage that, but you don't bring in these corporate moderators. Have the people's moderators and a people's town hall with Trump and Kamala. And let's see how she does without the blocking and tackling being done by the defensive and offensive line in front of her that the mainstream media provided the last one.
Awesome. Jack, I love that idea. And Charlie and I have been talking about that too offline, about how Trump really thrives in a town hall setting. So I personally hope he doesn't, but he probably doesn't need to, honestly. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.